Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Phyllis Martin is our special guest, and it's good to have her back with us. Phyllis is a prolific writer, a captivating speaker. As I mentioned to you earlier in the hour, she is a multifaceted person. I think the word I used was a Renaissance woman. She has many credits to her name, including several books. One is called Return to Chipping Sodbury, which is a contemporary novel, which we'll get her to tell us about a little bit later on. And the book I have in my hand, which is Word Watcher's Handbook, and a bunch of other stuff that we'll get her to tell us about later in the hour. Phyllis, welcome back to the show. Fix that. We need to get it back in print.
Well, I have to write it again. I've written it 3 times.
I know. It's third edition. That's the one I have in my hand.
I know. And I'm fortunate because Ann Landers praised it in her column.
Yeah.
And
it sold out.
Oh, does that do things for you?
Boy, no kidding.
Oh,
congratulations.
Yes.
Well, we need to get a fourth edition going here.
Well, I'm working on it.
Good for you.
Yeah, and so, in fact, if some of your readers have words that they just can't stand, tell them to write to Jim Blasingame, and then you'll pass it along to me.
Absolutely, I will do that. Yes, I do have a few of those. Let's talk about, one of the things I know you want to talk about was what you call the Terrible Ten.
Oh, yes. In fact, when I wrote Word Watcher's Handbook, I did the opposite of what most people do. Instead of saying, use these words, I've said, these are the words that will hurt you, and I've done, so many word clinics. If I'm a specialist on anything, I don't say that I'm a specialist on the English language, but I do know what words cost you jobs, what words cost you business, and I hope the small business owner will be listening, because I'm sure they are. But I have honed in on the 10 worst offenses, verbal offenses, and we can talk about those. In fact, number one is misuse of the word I. It's not between you and I, Jim. It's between you and me.
I know it, but I do this all the time.
Oh, do you?
And I know better.
Oh, shame on you. Well,
but you know, you hear people, and I'm gonna cut me and my audience a little slack here, even though you can be the taskmaster here, Phyllis. But the thing is, it's one of the most often misused examples, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And of course, what happens is that the listener stops listening to your message and thinks, oh, why does that person make that mistake?
Well, because in a minute I'm going to say, Phyllis, you and I will be back in a minute.
Well, that's all right.
And that's correct.
That is absolutely correct.
But we'll turn it around, and I'll say, if you want to call Phyllis or me, then that's correct. But, because I just used I, because I've just said, you know, Phyllis and I will be right back, which is correct, then I it's just normal to try to use that again.
Oh, it is, but you wouldn't say, listen to I.
I know it. And that's how I correct myself.
Oh, good, good.
And I do correct myself as a rule. I try to do that.
Oh, good, and I hope our listeners do, too.
And that's an important point, isn't it, Phyllis?
Oh, indeed.
That it's okay if you misspeak, it's okay to say the correct word and say, I should have said.
Oh, absolutely, because then they will give you credit. In fact, you notice that some of the people who are experts, well, Ann Landers, my buddy, will always correct herself in her column if she thinks she's wrong.
We don't always say things the right way, but once you do, if you know that it's wrong, it's okay to stop and say, in other words, if I said, please, if you'd like to give a call to Phyllis and I, then I would say, I should say.
Correct, yes.
Can you think of a better way to correct yourself?
No, I can't, because that sounds, we all have to be a little more humble at times, and I think that's good.
Well, now, that may be the stumbling block for a lot of people, because some people can't admit they make a mistake.
Oh, I'm sure that's right.
I mean, I'm sure there are people out there saying, yeah, I've got an ex-wife or a husband like that.
And I'll bet they do.
I'm sure. But that's a tough one, and you know, a lot of people, but I hear people do that I hear professionals on television, anchor people and reporters. I hear them doing stuff like that.
Oh, right. Well, Jim, when I wrote the first edition of Word Watcher's Handbook, I asked my husband to correct my speech, and that was the first time I'd ever really done that.
Yeah.
And he had a couple of words ready for me, and I said, well, why didn't you tell me? And he said, because you didn't ask before.
Well, but there are people who don't like to be. I have a person in my life who has, over the years, you know, I just wanted to let that person, you know, if I heard that person using poor grammar, then I would say, you know, the correct way to say it, and they didn't like it.
Oh, no.
At all.
Well, here's a message for the small business owner. Because you are the boss, your secretary or your assistant is going to be a little loath to correct you. But if you say to that person, please, let's have a pact with each other. Let me correct you if you don't mind, and will you please tell me? In fact, that's sort of the basis of the first edition of Word Watcher's Handbook, because I did some training, and the secretaries would say, well, how can I tell my boss he's making this mistake?
Yeah.
And,
well, what I did, I'm sorry, were you going to give an example? I didn't mean
to. Oh, no, that's all right. I just said, tell your boss that these are the words we discussed in class, and then show it to him and have his mistake included.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a subtle way of doing
Very
it, or a
subtle.
Mistake.
I like that.
Yes.
Well, one of the things that I did with an employee, I had at one point in time, I had a very good employee who used a word improperly. And what I did was I just said, you know, there's this word that you use that really you need to fix. And while I'm telling you this, I want you to know if I ever say anything like that, you've got the green light to tell me.
Oh, great. Great.
And that seemed to work okay.
Yes.
And you know what? That person never used it again. I never heard them use that word improperly again.
Right.
What's next?
Next is it don't. You wouldn't say it do, so why say it don't?
Right.
And
it don't matter to me. There's a song like that, isn't it?
But it does matter to your listener.
But now you, go ahead.
It helps to remember that it don't is a shortened version of it do not, and mm-hmm. That would sound very awkward to you, I'm sure.
But you know, there are a lot of people who would never say it don't in a professional setting or something like that. But when they're just out, you know, hanging out with their buds and they're, you know, you're using a little bit of slang and that sort of thing, that kind of thing slips out, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And I think if you're with an indulgent group, who cares? But I think if you're in business, you do have to care.
You got to be careful, don't you?
Oh, yes.
You got to watch what you're doing, and it does matter how you communicate.
Yes. And, Jim, I heard you use the word care, and that's part of careful,
Beautiful. Full
of care about your teeth.
Absolutely. Phyllis, we were talking about some of the 10 terrible things that people say that hold them back.
Oh, yes.
Number three. I think we're on number three.
We are. And Jim, these are the 10 most frequently mentioned errors in of people who can't stand errors in speech. And number three is can't hardly instead of can hardly.
I can't hardly believe that.
Well, you just used a double negative.
Yeah, exactly. Yes,
exactly. So think about can hardly and... If you say can't hardly, change it to can hardly, please, and your listeners will thank you.
And you know, there are people out there listening right now, Phyllis, who say, I don't say things like that. But you know what? I have known a lot of very intelligent, some very educated and very successful people who would never use any of the things that you and I are going to talk about today. And they would listen and they'd say, you know, that's just not something I would do. I don't have to pay attention to that. But some of these people I'm talking about have one thing that they say. There's this one little idiosyncratic thing that they say that's wrong. It's improper, or they use it improperly or whatever, and they have no idea that they're doing that.
Oh, right, and they say it over and over, so it might as well be 100 mistakes if you say it 100 times.
One of them is, I know this guy who's a multimillionaire, college educated, highly successful, one of the smartest people I know. You know what? When he means to say specific, he says Pacific.
Oh.
Like the ocean.
Oh, right.
And you know what? Including myself, nobody's had the nerve to tell him.
Oh, I could imagine that. But
and that's unfortunate because, I mean, that's the only chink in his verbal armor.
Oh, right. Well, I tell job seekers, try to identify 5 errors that you make in speech. Ask your children, ask your mate, ask the person who works for you.
Right.
Tell you about your mistakes. It's easy to come up with 5.
Well, you know, I know that during the course of doing this show 5 days a week, that I say things that there are times when I say things, and some of my audience might go, "Oh, I can't believe you said that." You know, and it's sometimes it may be something that I do on a regular basis. It may be just a temporary lapse.
Right.
Perhaps.
Well, so often we aren't told about the mistakes. I remember when I was in Chicago. They told me this was at a senior group, and they had interviewed a woman for a very important position there. She was interviewed by a board of directors, and she persisted in saying Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and they did not offer her the position, nor did they tell her why they didn't.
Right.
But that word she used over and over.
Illinois.
Illinois.
Yeah.
I try to tell people the noises in Chicago. Don't put it
that's
in
right.
Illinois.
That's right. The S is silent on that word.
Oh,
no question
absolutely.
About it. What's next?
All right, let's see.
Oh, I love this one.
Oh, irregardless instead of regardless. And, Jim, I know why people do that, I think, because the word irrespective
yes.
is respectable. But
it means something very similar.
Yes, but irregardless, you have a double negative because you have the IR in the beginning of the word and then the less, which is the negative.
I tell people that there is no such thing, no such word as irregardless.
Oh, you are absolutely right.
It doesn't exist.
Yes, and people will tell me, but I saw it in the dictionary. And I say, please know that a dictionary reports usage. Most of them don't arbitrate usage.
Right.
But they will tell you in the second line, probably,
that this word doesn't exist.
That this word is, a poor choice of words, and then they give you the correct one.
Now, here's a little trick for this word that I've learned.
All right.
If you find yourself about to say irregardless.
Yes.
As you're saying ear, change it to respective.
Oh.
And you bail yourself out.
Oh, great.
Even though regardless might have sounded better than irrespective, still you don't say the word that doesn't exist.
Oh, absolutely. And I was searching in my brain for the word that the dictionary sometimes use, and they'll say it's a colloquialism.
Yeah.
And in Great Britain,
I don't even agree with that though. Do you?
No, but in Great Britain, if a word is sort of substandard, they will call it an Americanism. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
So we're substandard. Is that what they say over there?
That's what they say. They call it an Americanism.
That's rather tacky. I'll have to take that up with them next time I talk to one of my friends.
Yeah,
with
do.
Phyllis Martin is our special guest and our good friend. She's the author of the now out of print book, which was in its third edition, Word Watchers Handbook, which is available in your library. Check it out there, folks. Literally check it out. And she's also the author of a book that is in print. It's a novel. It is a contemporary novel of mystery and romance called Return to Chipping Sodbury. She also is a poet. And we're going to take a quick break from our discussion of words and talk. We're going to have some culture in our show here today, which we don't often have that much of, I'm afraid.
Okay,
and
no.
Phyllis is going to give us a little culture by talking to us a little bit about poetry.
You know what they say, rhyme doesn't pay.
Ooh, that's a bad one.
And actually it doesn't, because most poets have to pay to have their work printed. Jim, the smallest amount I was ever paid for the written word was for some of my poetry. But I want to read a silly little verse because it has a message in it. May I?
Please.
All right. I don't know whether I told you this or not, Jim, but I've worked with ex-offenders, a motorcycle gang, and prostitutes.
You told me that once.
They taught me a lot. But here's this tip. I got this tip in prison from the rat we called the Squeal. The coat that's left unbuttoned is the easy one to steal. So when you're out to dinner and use the open rack, button up your overcoat if you hope to get it back. You know what they...
Now that's my kind of poetry.
Thank you. You know what my ex-offenders told me?
What?
That they literally look for coats on the open racks when there's a meeting in a hotel,
uh-huh.
And if it's buttoned, they won't steal it.
Is that right?
Because it takes more time.
They can't put it on.
That's right.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, so button up your overcoat.
Okay, good. Well, you know, you can't live very long, folks, without getting this kind of information. And only on the Small Business Advocate Show do you get that kind of tip.
Right.
Right? Nothing but the best for my audience.
They also told me to always leave the light on in the bathroom and have the door almost closed because they'll think there's somebody on the can.
I got you. Oh, well, thank you for that too, Phyllis.
Yeah,
see, I told
that?
You we had lots of culture here, folks, on this show. You have another poem?
Oh, I do. But I don't know that you want to hear all those poems. I'll look it up.
Well, save one. We'll identify another one. Next time you come back, we'll have you give us another poem.
Yeah, okay.
And now, your book of poetry is available?
Well, no, I didn't write a book of poetry.
Oh, just your poems.
I've sold 12 poems, Jim.
Congratulations.
To Murderous Intent Mystery Magazine. It's a magazine out of Vancouver, Washington. And I will tell those who are listening that they insist that you submit your material by email.
which is a little different from
very interesting.
The usual submission.
It makes a lot of sense. It's a lot easier on everybody when you do that.
Right, but if any of you out there who are writing verse, they do pay for it, very little, but it's Murderous Intent, Mystery Magazine, Vancouver, Washington.
Okay. You have an email address?
I don't have it on. They can get that from the library.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right, good.
I hope they'll go to the library.
By the way, tell us where Return to Shipping Sodbury is available.
It's available in almost every bookstore. And, I do need to tell you something that just delighted me. And by the way, my publisher is a small press publisher, a small business person.
Good. Good for you.
And he submitted the book for the Chicago publishers, whatever that is,
mm-hmm.
and it came in third out of 1,180.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's
like I said, folks, nothing but we don't have chopped liver on this show.
Right. It's a murder mystery, so those who like mysteries that have a touch of England,
yeah.
I think they would enjoy it.
Is there a bodice shot on the front? Is it one of those kinds of things, you know, with the beautiful woman you know what I'm talking about. It's not one of those.
Jim, this book starts with a wedding that doesn't take place.
Oh.
And I was inspired by actually being a part of a wedding that didn't take place. It was fascinating.
I never saw one of those. I've heard of them.
And I thought, what a way to start a book. And this one has a shoe on the flowers on the cover.
Oh, okay.
To demonstrate that the wedding really doesn't take place.
Okay, all right.
But not that one anyway.
All right. Very interesting. Return to Shipping Sodbury. Check it out. It's in bookstores and online?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and all of those. Thanks
all right,
for
let's
asking.
Well, I'm glad to. And we'll mention that again in a minute. Let's talk about the next word.
All right. We're at
or words.
You was instead of you were.
Yeah.
Or similarly, we done instead of we did. Oh, that just hurts ears so terribly.
Yeah. You know, even Phyllis, people who maybe they think that they're not well-spoken, when they hear people not speaking well, they know that.
Oh, they know it, and it makes you lose a little respect for that person's ability in another area.
Yeah.
I mean, if you hire a banker and he doesn't have good use of the English language, you wonder if you should put your money there.
Always strive to improve your speaking ability, ladies and gentlemen. Always try to do that. I always want to know if I'm doing something wrong. Now, if I create a temporary lapse, like if I use the word, for example, if I use I instead of me incorrectly or whatever, I mean, I know better than that, and I need to change that. I need to fix that. But some of these things are chronic, aren't they, Phyllis?
Oh, they are chronic. And the sad thing, as you and I said earlier, if you make a mistake such as you was instead of you were,
yeah.
You're probably saying that 100 times a week. So that might as well be 100 mistakes.
What about the letter S? That slips in there in insidious ways, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Just imagine if Judy Garland had sung Somewheres Over the Rainbow. Wouldn't that hurt your ears? And it's been a long time, but I was interviewing at Procter & Gamble, and I remember a woman who came in and said to me, somewheres in this vast company, there must be a spot for me.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, yeah, the first word out of her mouth, but I wasn't permitted to tell her.
We're talking about words that come up as some of the most negative that people use that have been reported as being some of the most negative words or terms that people use. The next one is number 7. Talk to us about that.
All right, but before we go to number 7, I have to say I heard you say anywheres.
Yeah.
I know that you were doing it in jest, and I just want to be sure everybody else knows you were doing it in jest.
I hope that they did.
Yes, and the 7th word is heights instead of height. And I think I know why they do that, because you think of length and height, but
mm-hmm.
there is no such word as height. It is height.
Leave the H off the end.
Yes, exactly. It rhymes with kite.
Right.
Yeah. And number 8 is use as a plural of you. And oh, does that hurt ears.
Use guys. I remember when I lived in Indiana hearing people say use guys.
Oh, I bet you did.
Use guys.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, then you've got, but now, why is it that Southerners get away with y'all?
That's music to my ears, but of course I'm married to a Southerner.
I think that's a colloquialism.
It is a colloquialism, and I think it's quite all right, unless you say you all to just one person.
Yeah, exactly. That's where the people who are trying to create a Southern persona on film, That's where they don't have a good Southern consultant, because you'll hear somebody on film say "you all" when they mean one person,
exactly.
When they're addressing one person, and that's incorrect.
Yes. I was delighted when I was in the South to learn that hey is a form of hello.
Yeah.
The first time it shocked me.
Gomer said that years ago.
Oh, I know.
Gomer says hey.
Yes, but when I was in Auburn, Alabama, the students are so courteous to everyone there, mm-hmm. and if they pass you on the street, it's hey.
One of the things that really annoys me about Southerners' use of the word y'all is they there are people, and this there's one person in particular that uses this term that I know uses this term, and this is not a this person is well spoken. Otherwise, he says y'alls when he means plural.
Oh.
For example, he says, "When will y'all's project be available?"
Oh dear.
Well, that's just horrible.
Oh, it is. Is this a business person?
Yes, and he and I were in New York one time in the downtown. We were in Midtown Manhattan. Working in the city on an appointment, and he used that term, and afterwards he didn't like it. But I said, "You got to quit saying that."
Oh,
because
yeah.
I felt like the appointment was over when he said that.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes
yeah.
it is.
Oh, absolutely, y'alls. That's not good at all.
Oh no, that isn't.
Okay, what's next?
All right, we want to cut these all in. Number 9: incorrect use of the word myself. You would not say myself and Jim are going to town.
Mm-hmm.
It's Jim and I are going to town.
Mm-hmm.
So myself is reflective. I do this to myself. I see this misused even in novels, and it bothers me. And then I stop what I'm reading, and it's a real interruption.
Yeah. The I don't know why people do that. I don't think I use that term very much. Very rarely do I use that. If I do, I don't know that I do. But you're right. I do know people who use that a lot.
Oh, indeed they do. I had a boss who said myself and so-and-so are going to be coming to your area. And
right.
I did have to say something because I didn't want him to be thought of as unintelligent.
And I just used the next term.
Oh, a lot?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot is one of those mistakes that occurs in written shall I say, language. And Jim, this was interesting for me because I learned that a lot is used, misused in the written way by younger people than by older people. They will make a lot one word
mm-hmm.
as they're writing it.
And there is no such word.
There is no such word, and I don't know why that happens, but it's, it is so frequent. And in fact, when I didn't know the age of my correspondent, this was one of the tip-offs. And sometime when we have time, let's get into upscale and downscale words, because you tell a lot about your background with the words that you use.
Well, let's talk about that in a minute. But before we do, because we finished up those 10, but I want to talk about something that really bugs me. And that's when people say, "I could care less."
Oh.
Now, that annoys me.
Yes.
Because if you say, "I could care less," what you really mean is, "I could not care less."
Exactly. And
but you say, "I could care less," and you're saying the opposite of what you mean.
Oh, you are, and not only that, it's a very tired, worn-out phrase.
Yeah.
Just as smart as a rocket scientist, if I've heard that once in the last 6 months.
Well, I like that one.
Well, it's getting tired.
And
you know?
A New York heartbeat, I like that one.
Yes, now I like that one.
A New York or a heart attack. What is
it? Oh, yes.
Anyway, one of those. Okay, now you said you were going to talk about some upscale. Is that what you called it?
Well, downscale, upscale.
What
for
are some
example,
of
those? Wash rag is downscale.
Wash rag. Is wash rag worse than wash rag?
Wash, yes, that is. And words that I think are important for, small managers or anybody in business is to think about the words that pertain to your business. For example, a server doesn't like to be called a waitress anymore.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Eric, my producer, has a question for you.
Oh, good. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you what the best way to say that would be.
How do you spell that word? How do you spell that? Is that A-X?
Oh, dear.
A-X-E.
I know of that particular word cost a promotion, Eric. It really did, because the person was being interviewed said, "Let me ask you another question." And that was the end of the interview, really.
Yeah, no, that's a killer. That is a killer. No question about it. And I don't care who you are, where you came from, what your background is, that is a killer. Do not say that. And if you know someone who says that, tell them to stop.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, now here's one that gets me. And this is something that I don't know what to do about it. It's insidious. And everybody in the world, almost, everybody that I know or have heard, even on television, all the professionals say this. They say, I don't think that's the right answer.
Oh.
When what they really mean is, I think that's not the right answer. But no one says it that way. It's always said incorrectly.
I know that. And if we, instead of saying, I don't think, just say, I think not.
But look at all the other different ways that we use that. That's a handy little term.
Oh, it is.
I don't whatever.
Yes, it is. So we have to think about how we're going to say it ahead of time, I think.
But it's used so prolifically now, so often now, that if you use it the other way, you almost seem odd.
Yeah, that's true.
That is the example, in my opinion, of the most generally accepted incorrect way to speak.
Yes.
Would you agree?
Yes, and there's another, and it's... There's two ways to look at something instead of there are two ways to look at this.
Oh, yeah. Now, I know I do that.
It's a very common one. In fact, the book I'm reading now by a very well-known author, and I won't tell you who that is, has used it several times in the book.
I know that it's not right, but I know that I say that. I catch myself saying that, and I don't mean to, but it's just one of those things. Now, that's kind of I guess maybe that's a little bit of a colloquialism. I don't know.
Oh, it is. But I think it doesn't hurt ears if you say there are two ways of looking at it.
Right. Yeah, getting that R in there for some reason, it's not as easy to say. It doesn't come out as quickly.
That's true.
Talk to us about some more upscale, downscale stuff.
Oh, good. These are out-of-it words and words that are on top of it words. For example, this is almost ageism, really. If you say blackboard instead of chalkboard, that dates you.
Okay.
And I remember when I was in England, they told me how it bothers them when they hear Americans talk about British citizens because they're subjects. British subjects.
I see.
A subtle thing. But we do have to think of it.
Absolutely. What are some other upscale, downscale things?
Well, when I was in Texas, they said, please tell people that we don't dig oil wells, we drill oil wells. some of my friends who do interior design said, oh, please, it's not drapes, it's draperies.
Draperies.
Yes.
Well, see, now I would miss that one because I'm not a drapery kind of guy. You know, I'm more of a blinds person.
Well, we'll have to train you, Jim.
I need a lot of training. That could be a lifelong project for somebody.
Well, that's why you let me come on.
Exactly, and that's why we're going to have you back in about a month.
Okay.
Phyllis, that's got to be the last word. Thank you for joining us. You did a good job.
Welcome.
Talk to you later.
Okay, good.
Got to go for this hour, folks. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. Let me tell you who our special guest is this hour. He's our friend Jim Ballard. Jim Ballard.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.